What do you do?
I do media studies.
This is a podcast project of our graduate media studies class, JAMS 860. I'm your host, David Kutchick, and today's episode is about the participatory condition. Let me have music.
We do media studies, oh, what does that mean? Nobody knows, so we'll try to explain. We do media studies, oh, what does that mean? Here's a podcast to try to explain.
I am joined today by fellow game detective and also former Super Smash Bros. Tournament teammate, Travis Schultz. What our podcast today is going to look like, we're going to be introducing the concept of participatory condition and then talking about Steam and Steam's new policy when it comes to games. So we're going to be talking about Steam in the context of the concept of participatory culture or the participatory condition. It's kind of interchangeable. It's the idea that participation in all forms has become environmental and normative. Basically, it's expected that you participate in culture and also politics in some form or fashion, and that it is kind of a moral obligation to do so. So it's kind of like the idea that if you don't have a Facebook page, you're weird. Like, it's tied up with that morality, almost. It's also the idea that that participation leads to being actively involved with other people who also can kind of, like, come together and form groups to make decisions that can affect change, either in politics or social worlds or culture in general. And in particular, it's that you're, like, called or you're, like, hailed, interpolated, if you want to use that word, to participate in basically all forms of life. So that leads not only to media and participating online, but then also like being an active member of your community and etc. And those kind of ideas have been around for a long time, right? That Americans should participate, if we're talking about America in particular, or that people should like contribute to their society, is an idea that's been around for a long time. But with the new advent of online social media, and then also, you know, people getting more rights over the time period, it's kind of more people are being called to participate rather than just like maybe the people who founded America, for example. And also the way people talk about it is that it's like a promise, but it's also a curse. It's this idea that now, ideally online, if people are able to participate and meet with other people who are like-minded and who agree with the same things that they do, they can kind of like amass together and make positive change in the world. And that's like the ideal for what participatory conditions or cultures can do is change the world in a positive way because everybody's kind of participating and actively engaged. But unfortunately, a lot of institutions and a lot of institutional powers still exist online, right? Just because you're in an online world doesn't really separate it out from like politics and economics as we know it. Even though this participatory condition where people are expected to participate, to maybe develop their own forms of media, text and share them, or comment on other people's ideas or whatever, you're still kind of operating within a system that takes other people's ideas maybe more seriously than your own, for example, or, you know, still has that economic underpinning to it in terms of like a social media giant like Facebook. So talking about Steam, Steam is a video game platform basically where people can post their games on an online database and then people can make Steam accounts and buy games directly online and do a direct download of like a file or an assembly of files rather than buying like a physical disc or cartridge.
It's the same process as going to Walmart. It's if you're doing it all through your computer.
Exactly. So Steam is the most popular and it's the one with the most like economic clout, I would say, in terms of online platforms.
Steam came from the company Valve, which was a software. I mean, they don't make software very much anymore, but they made a lot of software in the early 2000s, and I think maybe in the late 90s, and they got pretty big critical acclaim. They used that to build the Steam platform, and the Steam platform kind of just became this enormous thing that I would say the majority of people who play video games on a computer do it through Steam.
Basically, if you want to get any AAA game on a computer, like any big Assassin's Creed Fallout kind of game with that level, you'd have to go through Steam.
And alternatively, Steam kind of built a reputation as being a platform for independent developers to sort of circumvent having to try and distribute it through their own means. Like, you don't need to have a website necessarily or, you know, direct download links or your own store. Through Steam, they handle the distribution, the presentation, or I guess exhibition, if you will, and then also all payment stuff, which is, pretty big for people who might not have those resources.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's kind of like that ideal of participatory culture where it's like, there's a platform online kind of made for this. So if you're an independent game developer who maybe hasn't had success elsewhere, you kind of want to try your hand at this. It gives you an option to like reach a wider audience than just linking a file in a Reddit forum.
Now, if this was 5 or 6 years ago, I think all that would be wonderful and true, but especially in the past, I'd say 3 or 4 years, when they had their Steam Greenlight policy, and what we're talking about today is what they've enacted since 2017, and that's the Steam Direct policy, has really gone against what I thought was that very... a place for smaller developers to kind of produce and show off their creations. It's very, very different now.
Before, with Steam Greenlight, it was like you had a $100 down payment, I believe, was still the policy. In order to get your game on the platform, you kind of had to gather voters.
Well, it was a kind of a weird middleman because games would be in either early access or very early or betas, or you'd have half-finished and incomplete games, and people would have to take that incomplete product, and they had a percentage where if you get over this percentage of thumbs up, then they would put that game on the store.
Mm-hmm. Which some people kind of saw, again, bringing back to that participatory condition, it's the idea that, well, if people can vote for games they want to see, then it's the games that get made. But also some people saw it as kind of limiting other people's power and able to post their stuff online. I was reading an article and an independent game developer of a game called BitPilot, but he basically said it was kind of like paying Steam to enter a lottery, where like you're not sure exactly if people are going to vote for you or not, and if you, regardless of whether or not it gets published, the Steam gets the money.
And people will be voting for what's popular at the time, you know, which would have been, I think, when I was looking through Greenlight a couple years ago, there were a lot of Minecraft copies and things that were very similar to Minecraft because that's when that was really big, and that's what was getting votes. I mean, there were things that, I think there are a good selection of original things that went through Steam Greenlight. But you're ultimately faced with what's popular is what's going to get put on the store. Yeah. And people also have to vote on unfinished products, which is not representative. Yeah.
So their new policy now is...
Right. Steam Direct is what they call it. Yeah. And really, it's really a $100 check.
Again, which is, to like on the outset, it seems like a good idea. Because it's like, well, all you have to do is cough up, you know, manage to bring together $100 that you can kind of afford to give Steam, and then once your game makes over $1,000 in profit, then they give you that $100 back. So it's like a down payment, basically, for you, for them to be like, well, if your thing is profitable enough, then we'll give you the money back, which seems nice because then basically anybody can get anything on the platform.
It's nice on paper in the same sense that Kickstarter is nice on paper, but we know that in execution, there's a lot of problems that come from these things. And what you end up with is just a complete oversaturation of people just pumping out as many... A lot of it is misleading stuff. Mm-hmm. Because you can pump out really generic stuff that you make with pre-built engines and pre-built assets. And you fool somebody... You know, if you fool 10 people into buying your $5 game, or... You have to fool 10 people into buying your $10 game, and then you broke even.
Mm-hmm. All right, so... we're going to get a little word from our sponsors in here. once we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how platforms kind of choose what games will be put on. Steam has also recently updated their policy about how they're going to kind of police games, I guess, as you would say, on the site. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Today's presentation is brought to you by voting. Hey there, do you care about this country? Do you want to make America a better place to live? There's one thing you can do to help out. Go out and vote. Voting's the easiest way to participate in democracy. And while you're at it, make sure you tell your friends to do so too. All right, and we're back. Steam also has recently clarified what they were going to be doing with their platform in terms of policing certain games on it, because there's kind of a wide swath of games that had a little bit of questionable content that was kind of, that people were kind of questioning about why Steam would allow them to be on there.
It seemed like in 2017 and 2016, people were really trying, and I guess you could connect it with like the political climate of the time, but people were really trying to just push what they could get on there for the sake of it.
Yeah. Like one of the most famous ones that Steam kind of dealt with a week before this blog post that they put up was called Active Shooter, but it was like a multiplayer game where you could where one player would basically be like a school shooter and like a school with like children in it, and then the other people would be like members of a SWAT team trying to take that person down. So there was a lot of backlash to it, and before it was even released, Steam was like, no, like, this is not going to happen, occur on our platform. And so there's a lot of gray area in terms of Steam as a moderator of a platform, right? Like, people might be like, well, this is what I want to produce, like, this is what I want to make, and you as a platform should just, like, let me post whatever I want. That's the idea of being online, of participating, of being like, this is what I want to produce. There are people who want to buy this product. I've already proven that people want to buy this product. Shouldn't I be able to just, like, put it online?
It's a complicated, nuanced issue, which realistically, to make it work, you would have to single-handedly evaluate pretty much every single thing that's put on your platform.
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying is easy, but I'm saying Valve probably has the staff and the money to do that.
They do.
They've decided to take what I think is not the best route. It's the opposite. Yeah.
They say, Valve shouldn't be the ones deciding this. If you're a player, we shouldn't be choosing for you what content you can or can't buy. Which, again, is like this idea of people should be able to do what they want, participate however they want. But also, Valve is a platform. It's a curation of games, right? You wouldn't...
Well, I mean, that's what it's supposed to be.
That's what it's supposed to be. Now they're kind of rolling that back and being like, I think they say, as long as it's not illegal or trolling, as long as they're not deliberately trolling, we're not going to police it anymore.
Basically saying is they don't care about the quality of their platform. They care more about the response and the liability.
Yeah.
People must have known that these existed to some extent, but they didn't get up in arms about it until people complained.
Yeah.
Which is a common thing. So they don't care about the standards, or they don't care about, you know, this is offensive or negative. What they care about is people getting upset.
And what they care about is getting their money. Because
if people get upset, they make less money.
Yeah, especially if viewed in combination with this, like, $100 Steam Direct, right? If people can just put $100 down, that means anybody can do it, which is good for...
It means they can take advantage of it.
But it also means that they can take advantage of it. And so it's like, if they claim, like, well, everybody can post on here and we're not gonna, like, really police it anymore, then you get... That's how you get, like, 200 games, and, you know, out of 200 of them, maybe 25 are, like, really good, and, like, really a lot of time and effort has been put into them, and for the vast majority of them, they're probably going to be about middle of the road, and a lot of them are also just going to be, like, crap that somebody put slapped together, and, like, can be offensive, can be, you know,
and the only person who wins in that is Steam and Valve. The consumer doesn't win, the creator doesn't win.
The fact that this has come out in 2017 is not a coincidence.
No.
Because you have social media platforms like Twitter, like Facebook, kind of getting reprimanded by the government, and also by people in general, for not policing their platforms appropriately, for not, like, investigating content like they should. So I'm not surprised that Steam would come out and be like, we're not going to do that, before any of that comes along. But then they can just be like, well, we said we weren't going to police it, so...
Yeah, or it's like, well, we don't... Nobody sees the games. It's all computers, so we're not responsible.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, you see the same thing with Twitter and Facebook, where it's like, hey, why do you have this on your platform? Yeah. Oh, we didn't know.
Yeah.
Or we're not responsible. There wouldn't be this outrage and response if they were better policing their content, which it is their responsibility.
Yeah. Also, this, like, just shows the limits of, like, this concept of, like, if people participate, then things are going to work out. Because, like, as we're... And I think for a lot of platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Steam, they kind of have this idea that if everyone's participating, if everyone's, like, actively engaged in it, then they're going to police it themselves. And I think that's just not realistic anymore. And we see that that's not realistic anymore.
I don't even think policing, they don't have to. Because, I mean, I think companies are afraid to be called out for maybe it being censorship.
Yeah.
People calling it censorship, which it's not.
Which
it's just
not.
Deciding what you want to allow on your platform. And I think they're afraid to say no.
Basically, the people that are participating, that are using your data and are giving you information and are buying your products and you're targeting your ads to, they should not be the ones that have to police the platform that you run.
Having more policing or more discerning taste with what they present creates a better platform, it creates better content, and it's better for the consumer and the creator because there's less competition with things that don't deserve it.
Yeah.
It's better for everyone
if
you do that. Ultimately, it's like it's not worth... You know, the angry minority who... And it's not just to say, like, it's the counter of people who want the active shooter game or don't want it. You can spin it in any ideological direction or way.
Definitely.
It's not worth that vocal minority being upset because those people, a lot of them probably don't even really care about the games. They just care about that ideology that's being presented, or, you know, being provocative, essentially.
So, like, I feel like Steam is kind of taking a step back, and while it seems like a good idea that they're just kind of letting anybody post anything, it's, like, ultimately not. It's not really helping the people that are trying to be creative and are trying to, like, make good games and, like, kind of subside off their making.
It's one of those things, is, you know, it's like the Kickstarter thing. It sounds good on paper. We're being for the artist.
Yeah.
But ultimately, once you're more realistic and understand the flaws with it, you realize it's ultimately detrimental.
In time, hopefully things will get better. But,
well, stuff like this creates opportunity for competition. Yeah. Steam has a monopoly, essentially.
Yeah, they do. Platform. They do.
And the more hits they take with something like this, the more cracks in the system come up.
Yeah.
It gives more opportunities for other people to rise up. And competition, in this sense, is good for everyone.
Yeah, especially in a platform that's specifically for, like, selling economic stuff.
That's good for the consumer.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the podcasts in our series through 860. We'll check you later. No, we'll see you around.
We do media studies, oh, what does that mean? Nobody knows, so we'll try to explain. We do media studies, oh, what does that mean? Here's a podcast to try to explain.